All right. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has reconvened. The Honorable Chief Justice Gil Kurofsky is presiding. Your silence is commanded.
Go ahead and have a seat, everybody. I'm just going to need a second. Gently. Like a 10-year-old at Thanksgiving, I need to be scooted in. Thank you.
Of course.
All right. good morning still. I will call the second case. It is State of Wisconsin. Is it Rauscherak? Is that how you pronounce it? Rauscherak? Rauscherak. Rauscherak. May I please have the appearances? And 25 minutes for you, 30 minutes, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal. Okay, whenever you're ready.
Good morning. We have a lot of ground to cover. I wanna kind of start with a unified theory that I think answers a lot of the questions that we discussed both in the previous case and in this one. So, this theory would reaffirm Paiano-Roman as the controlling precedent in Wisconsin for determining whether a private search, or if it is given government status essential. And it would reject kind of the Gasper court's departure from the kind of traditional or mainstream position on the reasonable expectation of privacy. So this theory is that first, all users of ESP services have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the contents of their account. And it is not impacted by the terms of service at all, nor is it impacted by the content itself that is being uploaded, because that wouldn't be known at the time. These cases all rise and fall with the private search doctrine. So the first question we have to ask for all of these is this a private search, yes or no? So Wisconsin has Paiano-Roman as the controlling precedent. We'll kind of dive into that. That is kind of the basis of this case. The second step is then to ask, okay, assuming that it is a private search, what is the scope of that search? What is the extent to which that search kind of defeated the reasonable expectation of privacy in that evidence? The scope matters, obviously. Evidence it's not a binary question. Is there a reasonable expectation of privacy in this piece of evidence, yes or no? It's to what extent? To what extent it has been frustrated, and that's why we ask the question of, is there a virtual certainty that the scope will not be expanded? So this is where the reliability of the MD5 or the photo DNA issue matters. The question of the expansion of the scope and what presumptions we kind of bring into it. So if we assume, well, actually, let me back up and preface by saying here, reliability is what's going to determine whether we treat this as a Jacobson issue, where we're looking at a drug test, a binary choice between yes or no, is this contraband, and the tape labels issue. If we presume perfect reliability,
what issue? What was the second?
The tape labels example. So if we assume perfect validity and reliability of this hash matching process that ESPs rely on, we're looking at a Jacobson issue. If we assume that the process works correctly all the time, then yes, every single time we can assume that if there's a match, it is something that has been labeled as child porn by someone. However, if we kind of recognize what the circuit court in Gasper recognized and what leading courts have started to recognize, there are issues both with the validity of hash matching when it comes to MD5. Since 2009, it has been cryptographically broken. Someone could create a new file different than an original file in a way that would have the hash match intentionally, essentially creating false positives if we're talking about the CSAM context.
Can you refer me to where in the record that is, please?
In terms of?
What you just talked about, the false matches?
That is discussed in the appendix number.
Wouldn't that be an issue while you're getting the information? I'm just trying to sort out how that's an issue for us when we're deciding if a warrant is required versus if somehow the person is not guilty of the thing with which they might be charged.
Yep. And so if you look to pages, essentially, the appellate appendix 56 through the first half of 63. It kind of goes through the difference in the hash types, the difference in validity, issues about the reliability, and the just questions surrounding the process. So the reason it matters is because if we assume perfect reliability, we're dealing with Jacobson. If we do not, if we recognize that there are questions and uncertainties, we're dealing with a situation closer to the tape labels where we can be pretty sure that there's probably going to be the content that's on the label, but we can't say with virtual certainty that the tape has not been taped over, that we won't have something else other than, is this what is on the label? And that is a problem, particularly because there are false positives that occur in this process. The databases of hashes are created by NGOs, are created by ESPs themselves that partner with NCMEC to do this, are created by NCMEC. It is not necessarily the case that the contents all meet the definition of CSAM at the state or federal level.
Counsel, if there was I'm going to go to the roommate example here, who discovered a picture of some sort, thought it might be child pornography. My guess is there would be a reasonably high error rate on that identification. But that picture then is turned over to the government. The government looks at it. That doesn't really change the analysis as far as whether there's a private search at that point, correct?
In that hypothetical, right, because the physical evidence itself was in the hands of the private party. It is being passed on. They could have done anything that is possible to do. That's not what we have here. We have essentially...
But Google looked at the video.
Google did not look at anything. Google had a process scan the file, calculate a hash match, and said, this file has a hash that is identical to a value in CSAM's database, meaning that at some point somebody scanned a different identical file, bit for bit identical, no information about what the file was, no information as to if it actually does qualify under state or federal law as CSAM. All we know is that this thing is labeled such that we can be decently sure, but not positive, that what we're going to find if we open it is this other thing, but they don't have access to the other thing either.
In the Google case, in this case, an employee of Google actually did look at the file and confirm that it was child pornography before it was sent to the Center for Abused and Neglected Children, right?
That is absolutely correct. And that's why this unifying theory, I'm going beyond the step two or the first part of it, which is asking, okay, is Google search a private search or not? That's what our case focuses most heavily on. But to just kind of bring it full circle, the next step is then, okay, can we presume that if there is a match and nobody has visually observed it either at Google or NCMEC, is it a virtual certainty opening that file? We know what's going to be in there.
Again, if it was the same search, I explain how it's different than the roommate example. I don't really care how Google discovered it or what they did leading up to it, but in this example, they looked at it. Google looked at it.
In this case?
Yeah. And then Google gives it to the government, and the government looks at it. So if we're in the private search world, and I understand part of your argument here is Google's acting as an agent to the government. Let's put that aside for just a minute. It's a different question. If we're in the private search world, then it's the same, isn't it? Right? I mean, I don't know why any of that stuff matters at this point.
Yep. So if we concede that Google is not acting as an agent of the government, yes, this case would fall under the traditional idea of the private search doctrine, where Google, as a private employee or private citizen, viewed the image and passed it along.
So the only question before us then, just make sure I'm getting this right. If we're in the private search world, you concede you're not really able to succeed in that context. So your argument hinges on whether Google's acting as an agent of the government.
In this case, where Google had somebody view the file, yes, we would lose if Google is not deemed a government agent.
So is your position that Google was acting as a government agent? Was there a violation of Ross Sherrick's Fourth Amendment rights at the time the hash match process was done, or at the time the Google employee opened the file? Like, where was the reasonable expectation of privacy breached? So at the earliest stage, that would be running the software against the files.
That's correct, yes.
And why is that?
The,
why is that not Google's own interests, protecting its own interests rather than the government's?
So here, the case is going to be governed by Piano Roman. There's three requirements that must be met, according to this court, for a search to be considered private. All three are described as requirements both by this court and by subsequent...
Doesn't Piano Roman talk about a totality and not just the three?
No, because looking at the totality of the circumstances for each of the three requirements is completely consistent with the language of Piano Roman without having to either obviate or ignore.
But counsel, in Piano Roman, the court talks about totality of the circumstances over and over and over. How do you reconcile that?
In two ways. First, considering the totality of the circumstances, did the police initiate, encourage, or participate in the search? That's one way. Is for each of these requirements, as they describe them, looking at the totality of the evidence, was this requirement met? The other is that Piano Roman's actually decided on the second test that Wisconsin uses, the joint endeavor test, which is also consistent with how federal courts look at the issue. Broadly, there are two tests. There's this kind of three-prong requirement test that we have that most federal circuits distill into two requirements, but also the question of, okay, even if those aren't met, looking at the facts in this case, can we say that this was a joint endeavor between the government and the private party such that we also would consider it? So it's not, these aren't the same.
How do you get to yes on that?
Piano Roman itself is saying, great, we have the medical doctors here that were...
No, not in Piano. How do you get to yes in your particular fact scenario, prong two of Piano?
So our case is not analyzed from that joint endeavor question. That is an alternative test. It's not a requirement that both are met. Here we've got the Piano Roman test itself, three requirements that came from Rogers. We had a circuit court say that, yes, Mr. Ross Sherrick met his burden of proof that this search both was participated in by government agencies and encouraged by government agencies. Under Piano Roman and the Court of Appeals cases that have described these as three requirements, that is all it should have taken for the court to issue a decision saying that, yes, this violated the Fourth Amendment. This was not a private search because the requirements to be a private search were not all met. The court instead said, well, I don't like that. That feels counterintuitive. I'm going to do this other thing that no other case has ever prescribed, and just kind of weighed the three requirements together, which obviates the need to call them requirements at all. Then it's just a multi-factor balancing test, which we know not.
So counsel, many courts, if not all, but I would say the bulk of them, quite frankly, have found that companies like Google are private actors and not government actors. You believe that those decisions are all wrong?
I believe that statement is inaccurate. So what the courts have said is that in the cases before them, defendants have all raised the identical argument, 18 U.S.C. 2258A, the requirement that ESPs that find child porn report it. That is the only argument that has been raised in these cases, that specific subsection turns us into an agency situation. No other case, state or national, has raised the issue in the kind of web of regulations that we have described here. Section 230, FOSTA, the amendments that came in 2017 that kind of limited the scope of the shield of liability for companies that were engaging in this. So those cases were correctly decided. 2258A does not convert these searches into government searches alone. But looking at the regulatory framework broadly, all of these factors were designed and passed intentionally to pressure and essentially force ESPs to engage in this search function. And the fact that those courts decided that 2258A didn't do it doesn't really say anything for our case, where we're dealing with several other statutory frameworks and a much broader question of what is the compelling force.
Is that statute unconstitutional in Wisconsin?
Sorry, which statute?
The one you just cited.
So that's a federal statute.
I understand.
No, absolutely not. that is essentially the same as a, let's say, elementary school teacher with a mandatory reporting requirement. What we have here is essentially not only is there a mandatory reporting requirement on a teacher, but the school is squeezing the teacher to act as a therapist or interrogator and like sit down and try to suss out, is there anything unlawful going on that would trigger the reporting requirement? So it—
Well, counsel, can you point to the wording in the US code provision that you feel compels an ESP to conduct searches? Because I think there's language that says that if they find CSAM, they have to turn it over. That's there's some compulsory element of that. But where does it say you have to conduct the searches to begin with?
A, it doesn't. B, Payana Roman doesn't require that it does. It says initiate, encourage, or participate in it. And I can say with full confidence that it absolutely encourages explicitly that.
Where does it say something that is encouraging?
The congressional records surrounding the passage of FOSTA, which amended the Mann Act, which amended the TVPA, which amended Section 230, explicitly said we are doing these things because we're not happy that federal law places limitations on state law's ability to criminally charge ESPs for kind of burying their head in the sand. They were unhappy with ESPs not engaging in the search proactively themselves for fear of liability. There is about a 10 to 15 year period of movement going from the initial passage of Section 230 as part of the 1996 Telecommunications Act to court cases that led ESPs to completely be hands off and say, we are not going to touch anything for fear of liability, to new liability protections being put in place that still didn't really get ESPs to do the search, and the frustration from law enforcement and Congress that they weren't doing this search. So the framework is that we've got several different pressure points being applied through federal regulations, federal statutes, and the elimination of previously existing immunities to state criminal law that have kind of put ESPs in a position where this isn't voluntary for them. Failure to act can be considered complicity such that they'd have TVPA liability now.
All right, so you talked about the congressional record, the history. Is there something in the statute, some language in the statute that requires those searches or encourages those searches or participates in them or something that gets us out of the private search doctrine?
There doesn't need to be. The intent of the government is irrelevant to the question of whether the government is functionally compelling, functionally encouraging, or functionally initiating these searches. What we have is the reality of these searches are being done in response to intentionally passed federal legislation and federal regulations to achieve this outcome of engaging in affirmative searches by private entities with explicit immunity from any sort of lawsuit or claim that unconstitutional action has been undertaken by the ESPs if that action were undertaken by the government. So it's basically deputizing indirectly ESPs to engage in, you know, speech, content-specific speech censorship and searching by pressuring them in a way that they don't come out right and say, hey, you have to do this, because they know based on Skinner that that would get struck down. But here's the result we want to achieve. Do this thing. And when they didn't do it, they added a little more pressure and said, do this thing. Here's some, you know, new immunities we're going to take away. At the end of the day, the government is creating an environment where doing these searches, which they have explained is what they want, is no longer really optional. And we know from earlier that ESPs would not otherwise engage in these because they did not. And that was the reason that a lot of these laws were passed, was to pressure them because they did not want to engage in this kind of content moderation for fear of liability.
Is there something in the record showing that?
Yeah, we discussed it pretty thoroughly in the brief, discussing the two cases that led to the initial revisions of Section 230.
It seems like you're asking us to jump through a lot of causes. And in that these entities like Google and Snapchat would be perfectly fine if everyone was, and I understand we're not talking about Snapchat here, but just thinking about the Gasper case, and that these companies would be perfectly fine with all of these users uploading child pornography on their sites. And that unless the government, because the government says once you see a law violation, you must report it, that otherwise that before that they were doing nothing, and without that they would be completely fine if everyone was just watching child pornography all the time on Google.
No, that's not my argument at all. That is functionally what the other cases before us have claimed under Section 2258A. If we were just talking about the reporting mandate, that'd be one thing. We're not. We're talking about changes in law to create civil, criminal, and regulatory exposure, risk, and liability to force behavior changes in ESPs that we're not otherwise willing to engage
but
in.
None of the statutes or the regulations say you must do these searches, do they?
Nor does Pius Roman say that for a private search to exist, anything's fine as long as the statute itself doesn't say you must do this. That is not the court's precedent. That is not the analysis we're doing. The question is, did the police or law enforcement or government initiate, encourage, or participate in the search? Did the private entity engage in the search to further its own ends or for law enforcement's purposes? Or did the law enforcement jointly work with the government to carry out the search, which would be the joint endeavor part? I think the third we can safely say is not at issue here. The first two squarely are. In this case, the circuit court found, based on the detailed briefing and analysis of the various federal regulatory and statutory, kind of the interweb between them, that is entirely the case that Google's processes here, the use of NCMEC's software, the use of NCMEC's hash databases, involve government participation, and the regulatory regime encourages, it didn't go as far as to say compels, but encourages, which is all that is required here, to engage in these searches. So under this court's precedent, this court's test that exists, the circuit court found that yes, factually, as a historical matter of fact, these regulations achieved this result and caused this motivation for Google. And based on that, the finding or the conclusion of law was that the first factor was met.
Are you saying that we need to look at it from Google's perspective on whether it felt some compulsion to do this, or is it an objective test looking at the government's conduct? Or both?
I don't think intention matters at all. It's a factual question of, do these statutes and regulatory frameworks cause Google to engage in this conduct that otherwise they may or may not? Can we say that it at least encourages it or involves government participation? If so, then yes, it meets the first prong of Pius Roman. So intent doesn't matter. It helps. It's illuminating. But at the end of the day, if the government is creating a regime in which a search occurs that would then be mandatorily reported to the government for prosecution, it's hard to say that, oh, the government didn't say they intend for this result, but this is what's happening, so we're just going to kind of let it be.
Pius Roman, well, you know, this is, we're dealing with federal law here. And so in one sense, our state cases are interesting and maybe have some less relevance or not based on our own interpretation of the Wisconsin Constitution or anything. Your opposing counsel argues that Pius Roman's adoption of this test from the Court of Appeals was wrongheaded and maybe leads to complications and has no basis in federal law. Since what we're doing is applying United States Supreme Court precedent, in reality, should we, and I'd like you to respond to your opposing counsel's argument that to the extent that there is a strict three-part test or a three-part test in general that determines whether something is a private search, as articulated there, that that is really not an accurate statement of federal law, and we should depart from that and clarify the law.
I disagree with that as well. So there is no standard formulation of this test in federal law. The Seventh Circuit has acknowledged it such. They've said the test that we use is generally that the government cannot know of or acquiesce in the interest of conduct, or the party cannot instead intend to assist the government but must have private purposes. The Sixth Circuit in Sykes says there's a compulsion test which asks whether the government compelled the private party's action, again, going to compulsion in fact, not necessarily in intent. Then the nexus test, which asks whether the private party cooperated with the government. Eighth Circuit in Ringland, the government can have knowledge of or acquiescence to the intrusive conduct. The private individual must be acting to further his own purposes and not with the intention to assist law enforcement, and the private individual cannot act at the government's request. These are all essentially reframing of the same three requirements that Pius Roman announced. In all of them, they are also described as requirements.
Well, let me just push back a little bit. I mean, if you look at this test, number one, the police may not initiate, encourage, or participate in the private entity search. So to the extent you're saying the law encourages it, and that therefore it cannot be a private search, that just seems plainly wrong with the weight of federal law on these questions, if interpreted that way.
I think that there is a, yes, I think that there is a point at which encouragement crosses the line, yet it's still encouragement that would meet the private tests. It is an issue where all encouragement doesn't necessarily equal a violation of the federal statute, whereas it's in this case, one could argue that, hey, maybe the encouragement found was at that lower end that wouldn't necessarily rise to the level that federal courts. Here we also have participation being found by the court. So it's not just the encouragement here. We have participation by the private entity because of the reliance on technology that's developed and disseminated by NCMEC, maintained by NCMEC for the hash databases, and the fact that NCMEC essentially has taken over a large chunk of exclusive law enforcement powers when it comes to child porn.
Are there any other courts that have adopted this three-part test that our Court of Appeals came up with and that we adopted in, to the extent it's a test that we articulated in Pano Roman?
In terms of other states or?
Other states, other federal circuits, anybody. Has any other court articulated this as the rubric for identifying whether private search has taken place?
I am not aware of the answer to that. The federal courts that have addressed this issue in this context are the ones that I've described.
If we rule in favor of the state in Gasper on the private search doctrine issue, is there any way we could rule in your favor on the private search doctrine issue in this case?
Yes, Gasper didn't raise the issue. Honestly, it comes down to that. What's before the court in Gasper is whether or not the viewing of the files by the law enforcement officer or DOC or DOJ expanded the scope of the hash match that was at issue there. And that already presumes that it's a private search. They did not challenge Snapchat's, you know, willingness or whether the government, they did not challenge whether the Snapchat shirt was private or not under Piano Roman. So here we easily could say, yes, applying these requirements, the circuit court did not err in finding this. And therefore the conclusion of law is that this is a government search and suppression is warranted. You don't necessarily have an inconsistency with saying in Gasper, okay, on the question presented here, where we're presuming that it is private, this other result occurs. So I think that's how I would distinguish the two cases. We're just talking about different stages of the analysis. And in Gasper, they skipped ahead to the next one without addressing the prior. I'm sorry, I see my time is up, but I'm happy to answer any other questions.
I think we'll save them for rebuttal if we have any. Thank you. Mr. Connolly, you're having a busy morning.
A bit. May it please the board. I want to start off with like a clarification because there were a lot of questions about, is it in the record? Is this fact in the record? And the truth is we have a limited record because there was no suppression hearing. This case has been litigated under the assumption that the terms of service submitted attached to the pleadings are the governing terms of service. I think the cyber tip was considered by the circuit court. And then all other facts were considered by the circuit court undisputed. So to the extent that any issues that we discussed today turn on a disputed issue of fact, the appropriate remedy would be remand for an evidentiary hearing. But in this case, a remand is not necessary because the private actor argument advanced by Rorschach is entirely based on federal law. And we can look at that federal law and conclusively determine that they did not encourage, coerce, or cause Google to initiate the scan of his account in any way.
I just want to ask you, about the expectation of privacy, okay? So in the question that the Court of Appeals certified to us, it asked whether a user has a reasonable expectation of privacy, and now I quote, in files that the ESP obtains from the account. So they use files and account in the same sentence. Mm-hmm. Does it make a difference to you whether we're talking about the files or the account?
It does.
Okay, go ahead.
The government does not dispute that as a general matter, there is a reasonable expectation of privacy in an electronic service provider account. This is about the files that were opened by Google. So in this case, it's like if the Google employee was the detective in Gasper, because he's the defendant's claiming that Google was a government agent. Yeah. So the same question is, was this alleged government agent acting to violate the Fourth Amendment when they opened the file? And for basically the same reasons we put in Gasper, the answer in the state's perspective is no. The defendant also brought up mandated reporting laws, because it is true that federal law explicitly says that ESPs do not have to search for CSAM, but they do have to report it if they gain actual knowledge of it. I was caught by surprise by that because he did not rely on the reporting requirement in his brief. I did not see any citation to 2258A in the table of authorities anywhere. Regardless, though, the Sixth Circuit in Miller considered those cases and collected cases that held that people mandated to report child abuse were not made government actors by that reporting requirement. Justice Hagedorn, you also asked some questions about the governing standard, and state has a lot of reasons why standard of review and the operative test should be in the state's favor. But ultimately, I don't think it matters. I think all 20 courts have been correct, whether you apply Rogers, whether you treat the circuit court's interpretation of federal law as factual findings or legal conclusions. The fact of the matter is that federal law says ESPs do not have to search for CSAM, and all 20 courts to say that they don't, that therefore the government doesn't compel them to search, are correct.
If we were to clarify Panel Roman and its adoption or incorporation of this Rogers test in your brief, what would you want us to say?
I would want to, first of all, I would say get rid of Rogers. But if you didn't want to do that, there are federal courts that use three-factor analyses, not these three factors. But I know the Eighth Circuit breaks it down into three, all tied to the totality of the circumstances. I think you could harmonize Rogers with Payano Roman in light of this argument by saying, well, look at the totality of the circumstances and here are factors to consider when evaluating, which then allows one factor to outweigh another, which, as the circuit court cogently explained, that's what courts do. We look, weigh circumstances, and a little bit of one might be outweighed by a lot of another. Another thing I forgot to mention in the briefing, apparently, is that Rogers came out 1 year before Skinner. So in that respect, it's really not surprising that it's somewhat inconsistent with Skinner. It didn't have the benefit of Skinner. I think that weighs in favor of just setting it aside, as the Court of Appeals did the best they could before the U.S. Supreme Court weighed in, and then Payano Roman followed Skinner's lead.
Is the, in your mind, in this case, is the private search doctrine an exception to the warrant requirement, or are we out, or is the Fourth Amendment not implicated at all? Because I think you argued it, I think in your second brief in this, I think here you argue that the Fourth Amendment is not implicated at all. And I think in Gasper, you argue that it might be an exception. And
I can clarify.
Chance to clarify. Thank you.
So the state's position in Gasper is that the detective's viewing of the file was either not a Fourth Amendment event because there was no reasonable expectation of privacy, or the private search doctrine applied, which is a valid warrant exception. In this case, the detective's viewing of the file is not at issue. And Ralph Sherrick concedes that the detective could lawfully view the file. So I think this question is, was the Fourth Amendment implicated when Google opened the files, as the detective did in Gasper, or is Google a private actor at all? So I think it's either the Fourth Amendment, I guess either way, the Fourth Amendment was not implicated. Either no Fourth Amendment event occurred or no Fourth Amendment actor did a search.
In this case.
In this case. Mm-hmm. Oh, and Mr. Ralph Sherrick also argued that no courts have yet addressed the specific statutes, but the state cites two courts that rejected his Communications Decency Act argument and two courts that, one or two that rejected the Protect Our Children Act reliance. And the The Protect Our Children Act of 2008 is specifically notable because it created the law that says ESPs do not have to search. I have relatively little to add at this point. I'm happy to answer any more questions, or I'll just part in closing. The state's goal in these two cases is really to ensure that detectives can continue doing what they have been doing for years, is viewing the cyber tip in its entirety by viewing the file. The state seeks to provide some different ways to get to that result that is reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. And the state is trying to get a holding that is narrowly tailored to these CSAM prosecution circumstances, which is significant. The ICAC in Wisconsin receives thousands of cyber tips a year, but the holdings confined to these circumstances do not risk inadvertently vitiating electronic privacy in other circumstances. So I'd ask that you please affirm the Court of Appeals in Gasper and affirm the order denying suppression in Ralph Sherrick.
Thank you. Bottle?
So just as a point of clarification, essentially, all 20 federal courts have not said that ESPs are not compelled to engage in these searches. That is simply false. This generalization of very specific holdings that are case applicable is a dangerous thing to do. Precedent that is very technically complex, and these differences matter. What each of these 20 have said is that 18 USC 2258A, which we did cite in our brief, it is the Protect Our Children Act. It's codified in a bunch of scrambled places, does not itself compel searches. It says nothing as to whether any other statute or any combination of other statutes do functionally compel these searches. All 20 of these cases, with the exception of, I believe, Fourth Circuit case that also adds in the early versions of Section 230 before the FOSTA amendments, are only answering that limited question of 2258A.
How many courts have said what you're asking us to say?
No courts have been asked to. So I can also say that we don't know for sure that federal courts would not be receptive to these arguments. They have not been made. This is an issue of first impression nationwide when we are considering the network of regulatory regime. If we say just Section 230, great, there's cases that address that. If we say just 2258A, great, there's cases that have rejected that. But when looking at 15 years of amendments in history between these three or four different federal overarching regulatory regimes, no court has ever been asked this question before.
Are you saying that no court has decided on the question of whether or not an ESP has acted as an agent of the government when conducting a search such as this?
That is not the question before this court, nor before any of the courts that have asked. Because the defendant bears the burden of proof here, the court is essentially deciding whether the defendant's arguments in support of the conclusion that Google is a government agent meet the burden of proof to reach that. In all of those cases, the defendant only raised either 2258A or, in one exception, the early versions of Section 230. And the courts all said, no, based on just this statute, Google is not a government agent. No court has been asked, okay, let's look at all of the regulations kind of surrounding this practice. Do those in combination functionally compel Google to do this search? No court has been asked that question before this. And that is why we can't just look at those earlier cases and say, yeah, this is exactly the same. It should have the same result. It's not the same, because 2258A, if you look at subsection either F or G, explicitly also says we are not mandating these searches. You have to report them, but we're not mandating that you do them. So obviously that statute alone will never create a government agency action for a private party. That ignores the fact that other regulatory regimes that we've discussed in combination do create this coercive effect that is causing ESPs to engage in these searches. So,
well, counsel, under rules of statutory construction, I don't understand how we could disregard a provision that explicitly says searches are not mandated and find that some combination of other provisions or regulations does create such a requirement. when there's an explicit provision saying it's not? How do we get there?
Because it's not saying that it is not as a blanket matter. It's saying nothing about this subsection or this section creates that obligation. That doesn't mean the obligation isn't external. That is just saying that don't read this requirement of mandated reporting to mean you have to do this thing in this context. So all it is addressing that 2258A requirement. It's not saying it is never the case that government action, government regulations can create this coercive effect such that it would make the search become a government search. It's just saying that looking at this statute alone, you can't go into court and argue, hey, we've got to report this now, so it's government search automatically. So it's narrow. And again, we've got to fight the urge to generalize these very narrow specific questions of the interaction between these different federal statutes.
And you're hanging your hat on the word encourage.
No. Here, the court also found that the government participated. I think even under the federal rules that have been announced, these arguments are also ones that I would make and would expect courts to take seriously. And no court has had the opportunity to discuss the web of these regulations and their impact on ESP Act. So it's disingenuous for the state to say, hey, we know these 20 courts would never go for this, when that is absolutely not true. These same arguments apply regardless of which formulation we pick. In Wisconsin, with the existing case law, obviously, we have argued that, okay, under Wisconsin law, here's how we need to answer this question based on the circuit court's findings. Here's the result. So even if, you know, this court wants to, you know, unify our Wisconsin precedent with the federal standards, that doesn't answer this question. That the analysis still has to continue to, okay, are the regulations in these frameworks functionally making Google do this in a way that we are comfortable saying this has become government action? Because taken together, it resembles the railway case that had all the requirements of testing and Skinner, I believe it was called. So it's saying all of these together resemble Skinner, even if one of them in isolation does not resemble Skinner, because that has always been the basis of rejecting these claims, is that, oh, Skinner was so much more thorough in the requirements, in the things that it expected and what it made the railway do. We're not seeing that from this one statute. But if you take all of them together, that becomes more clear. Thank you. My time is up.
Okay, I don't see any more questions. We are adjourned. We are convening the private conference at 1:30. Thank you, everybody. That'd be great. Mm-hmm.